listen, listen, listen. God is speaking to us.
Kairos Milwaukee United Church of Christ presents Called by Name, the sermon by the Reverend Gene Randall Bodman, presented on Sunday, January 13th, 2019.
The people were filled with expectation, wondering in their hearts. And I wonder, when was the last time you were filled with expectation? When did you last feel a sense of hope-filled anticipation? Perhaps it was when you were expecting family to arrive for the holidays. Perhaps with children or grandchildren in the house, Christmas morning filled you with anticipation. Or maybe just a partner with a childlike sense of wonder was enough to fill the house. Maybe the days and hours before a long-planned trip filled you with expectation, whether a few hours down the road or halfway around the world. Perhaps it was the sound of an orchestra tuning or the first page of a new book by a beloved author. What fills you with expectation? I wonder what our expectations are around church. What we expect when we come to worship, when we spend time in community, what we expect and hope about moving closer to God. We are a particularly warm congregation in a hospitable denomination. And yet, with words like, "His winnowing fork is in his hand to clear his threshing floor and to gather the wheat into his granary, but the chaff he will burn with unquenchable fire." With words like that ringing in our ears, the message of welcome might seem double-sided. With words interpreted for us as a threat of damnation, we might be forgiven for having some hidden reservations, some worry at the base of our minds and hearts about this spiritual path we are on together. Some of us grew up in traditions that nurtured us, but also left us with the impression that we were, in our essence, not quite enough. That attaining God's love and a sense of peace required that we try just a bit harder to be pure, to be holy, to be ethical and focused on justice, or to be deeply spiritual and serene. And that once we had attained whatever goal we set for ourselves, then we could breathe easily, assured of God's approval. Even if we grew up in a tradition that truly emphasized God's mercy, it's hard not to absorb messages of personal inadequacy from the culture around us, clamoring at us all the time. A colleague of mine recently shared a story that combined baggage from both the secular and religious culture. She made a New Year's resolution to set aside time every day for spiritual reading and meditation. And at the recommendation of another clergy friend, she downloaded a daily Bible app to help herself meet that goal of daily reading and meditation. The very first devotional on New Year's Day was about adopting healthy habits for the new year. Well, that sounds all right. But by the end of the second paragraph, the app was berating her for allowing herself to be fat and unhealthy. Those were the exact words. And concluded that she was, quote, disappointing God. Ouch. And of course, this app, while wrong, is just one of 1,000,000 voices joining in the clamor, announcing that who we are and how we are in the world is shameful. And I wonder if we as church, and by church, I mean the Universal Church and the United Church of Christ as a denomination, and even us, here in our own beautiful and beloved congregation. I wonder if we, the church, have unwittingly collaborated with the voices of shame, if not by our words, then by our silences and our timidity. I had the experience recently of meeting several young people, 30-somethings, who don't typically attend church services or even go into church buildings. One young man told me that being in church filled him with the same kind of dread that going to the dentist fills us with. He expected church to hurt. And he had a sense that when he went into church, he would be at someone else's mercy. That same day, a young woman, funny and brash, said that she hoped she wouldn't burst into flames as she passed over the threshold into the sanctuary. Now, I don't know these people well. I only just met them very briefly, though I sincerely hope I will have a chance to listen to their stories someday. But I wonder what can have happened to them to cause such fear and anxiety. And it breaks my heart that no one ever told them that this is what the voice of God also sounds like. Do not fear, I have redeemed you. I have called you by name. You are mine. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you. For I am the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel. And you are precious in my sight and honored, and I love you. When great crowds of people went out to the River Jordan to be baptized, fishermen, tax collectors, and soldiers alike, they were full of expectation and wondering. They went out to John and down into the river, one by one, but not alone. God called each one of them individually, by name, but not into solitude. God called them into a new community of life. And they were filled with expectation, and they wondered if John might be the Messiah. Now, did you notice how John answered their unspoken wonderings? No, he said, not me. My baptism is only with water. Someone greater is coming. That one will baptize you with the Holy Spirit and with fire. That sounds uncomfortable. But John goes on with these words that intimidate. His winnowing fork is in his hand. He's going to separate the wheat from the chaff, put the wheat in the granary, and the chaff, that's going to get burned with an unquenchable fire. John was a bit of a dramatist. But this passage is one of those that has been used to intimidate people, ostensibly to scare us into being the kind of behavior that will keep us from unquenchable fire. I don't know about you, but I've never known anyone to be scared into good behavior. We imagine that this means that the wheat equals the good people who will go to heaven and be comforted forever, and the chaff represents the bad people who will be burning in hell forever. It's possible that John understood it this way too, and that so did his hearers, but that they were comforted because they had come out to John, and so they were the good people. But Jesus didn't come to execute a judgment that would destroy either Jews who didn't measure up or even the oppressing Romans. Another way to think about the metaphor of the wheat and the chaff is not that some kinds of people or some individuals are wheat to be treasured, and other kinds of people or other individuals are chaff to be burned, but that each one of us is both wheat and chaff, because wheat and chaff belong to the same stalk. It is one organism. Every grain of wheat is surrounded with a scaly outer casing, chaff. And every one of us has habitual or occasional old thoughts, habits, and patterns that keep us from growing healthy and strong. Chaff. John may have been expecting a separation of persons, but Jesus did not come to separate one from another, but separate each one of us into our own belovedness, freeing us for right relationship with God, ourselves, and others. First comes the belovedness, then the release of chaff. I don't know if any of you have ever seen an illustration of the way wheat and chaff was separated in the ancient world. I've seen something close to it on an Amish farm. They take a big winnowing fork. It looks, some of you probably know all about this from being on farms. I'm a suburbanite. I had to visit a farm to see this, and it was an Amish farm. And they have a fork, and they dig it into the wheat, and they toss it into the air, and the chaff is blown away, and the wheat is retained. The chaff is burned because it's useless. It's not burned to hurt it. The wheat, the living wheat, is retained. Jesus portrays for us a God who lands on the side of mercy over and over and over again. A God who is committed to a judgment of some kind. The chaff must be removed because the world is in fact off kilter. And we know that our own chaff does bind us and keep us from wholeness. This image of judgment in Luke is also an exposure of our own tendency to judge, our own biases against those other people, and perhaps a secret desire that the other guy may not be included. And it reorients us to a commitment to the belovedness at the heart of everyone, the essential acceptedness of each grain of wheat, each person, every one of us. John and Jesus together both pronounced it and modeled it, because everyone who came down to the river was baptized individually into beloved community. And after they were baptized, they were reminded to share. Earlier in Luke, after the tax collectors and the soldiers were baptized, they asked John, "Well, what should we do now? How should we change our behavior to be part of this new community?" And that's what John's answer amounted to. Share. Don't take more than you need. Share what you have. You belong to each other. And Jesus modeled for us a way to stay in community. After his baptism, he prayed, and the voice from heaven announced his belovedness. And that same message is for us. Not just for us here gathered, but for the world. In a few minutes, we'll spend some time remembering our own baptisms, either the event itself, if you were baptized as an adult, or the promises made for you if you were baptized as an infant, and the stories you have heard about that day, perhaps the pictures you have seen. And as we do that, I invite you to hold in your hearts and your imaginations the people for whom church is the last place they would come, expecting a word of hope or affirmation or a message of their own belovedness. To consider if we have ever been a part of the impediment that keeps frightened people away. To consider how we can instead be a doorway and an invitation and a blessing, so that every person can hear what the Spirit said through the prophet to the people of Israel. "Do not fear. I have redeemed you. I have called you by name. You are mine. You are precious in my sight and honored, and I love you."
Listen, listen, listen.